This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Here we are, March 21st. Chilly start to this Friday morning, 49 degrees right now. The average temperatures throughout the area is going up to only the upper 60s today, and that's going to be toward sunset. So it's going to be a kind of cool feeling day, but we better enjoy it because before you know it, the heat and humidity is going to be your highs in the mid-70s for both Saturday and Sunday. Tommy Tucker, WWL, joined by Christopher Millen, founder and CEO of Beacon Bio, to talk about a biotech startup here in New Orleans and what they're working on as it relates to ovarian cancer. Good morning, Christopher. How are you?
Good morning, Tommy. I'm doing well. Thank you so much for having me on.
Thanks for taking the time. I'm always excited about innovation and things that move the city forward, especially when it comes to women's health. Tell me a little bit first when we get started here about Beacon Bio and about this news that we're talking about surrounding your company.
Sure. So the company's called Beacon Bio.
Beacon, I'm sorry.
And that's all right. We're developing blood tests in general for early cancer detection. And the idea is that we have great treatments available for many different types of cancer, but some patients are not getting access to those treatments just because we're diagnosing a lot of those cancers too late. And so the goal is to be able to surveil patients that are at higher risk for particular cancer types and connect them to very effective therapies to potentially save their lives.
So the grant that you received from the National Science Foundation, is that at risk at all with DOGE? That's the first question that popped into my mind when I saw the work you're doing and the National Science Foundation, as I understand it, an independent federal agency that supports science and engineering, but it is a federal agent. So tell me about that. Are you worried?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think we're fortunate that these small business innovation grants have not been too strongly affected by changes at DOGE or changes that are being enacted by DOGE. And the project itself is already funded and we're already getting started on that work. You know, we'll see when we apply for phase two if some of these governmental changes affect us. But at the moment, we have the green light to go.
But when it comes to finding, and we'll talk about early detection in a second and why it's so important to ovarian cancer, but federal funding has played a large role in a lot of the advances that we've had in medical treatment, right?
Absolutely. To get to this point, I've worked with a lot of private investors that, you know, supported and had vision for what we were working on. Some of them actually are based in Mandeville. And that enabled us to get some foundational data that we could then take to the federal government and say, we have a chance to create a product here. But this federal funding is really necessary for us to be able to take that step to get from the point where we're in the lab to the point where, you know, we have an actual product.
Let me take a quick break. We'll talk about the importance of catching ovarian cancer early, and more with Christopher Millen, founder and CEO of Beacon Bio, a new startup in New Orleans working on a liquid biopsy that could detect ovarian cancer earlier and save lives. 820 traffic, WWL. It is 7:25. Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Christopher Mylan, founder and CEO of Beckon, about their work as it relates to, in New Orleans, a biotech startup about detection of ovarian cancer. Tell me why it's so early detection so important when it comes to ovarian cancer, Christopher.
Sure. Ovarian cancer is really one of the types where when it's diagnosed at stage one, the therapies are so good that survival rates are above 90%. But if it's diagnosed at stages three or four, the survival rates drop into the 30s. And unfortunately, that's when the majority of cases are found. So it's really one cancer type where early detection has, you know, a huge effect on the survival rate.
So what you're doing sounds pretty advanced. Can you kind of explain it a little bit more simple for the layman in us?
Yes. The way I like to explain it is that when a tumor forms and those cancer cells form in a specific organ, they're kind of living in their house, but they're making a lot of phone calls. They're sending a lot of communication signals out into the blood to communicate with other parts of the body. And a lot of those signals are phone calls to the site where they want to spread to, where they want to metastasize to. And what our technologies let us do is filter out all of the other things that are in the blood so that we can hone in on those signals very specifically. And the second part of our technology lets us decode them so that we can say, you know, this is very sensitively, this code came from a cancer cell. And we build that, we engineer that code into the blood tests.
This seems like a big step when it comes to current diagnostic methods, isn't it?
It is. You know, the current diagnostic methods are more reactive. You know, a patient comes in with a symptom, they'll get an MRI or an ultrasound for ovarian cancer, and it's diagnosed after the fact. And that's why, you know, these stages one and two tend to be asymptomatic, and that's why we don't catch them early enough. So this would be a big step.
We talk about, you know, New Orleans becoming a biotech center, medical corridor, all of that. What does this grant mean for both Beckon Bio and the New Orleans biotech community?
It means everything. I think when I graduated from Tulane in 2009, the idea of starting a biotech company in New Orleans, you know, would have been a little bit of a challenge. But the folks at the New Orleans Bioinnovation Center and folks putting together the BioDistrict have done so much since then. That it is possible. And this funding that we got really lets us take this big step. You know, the big thing that we need to do now is clinical validation of the tests, and the funding will let us do that with gynecological oncologists at LSU, Ochsner, Tulane, and Touro as part of this process.
A lot of people have never heard of the Bioinnovation Center. Tell me a little bit about that and the role that it plays.
Yeah, it's essentially, you can imagine it like a WeWork, but specifically for biotech. It's a beautiful building at the north end of Canal Street, and they allow every size of biotech company to come in, have access to lab space. They do a lot of programming to help companies that are in there access funding. And specifically for us, they helped us find support to write this grant because, you know, these grants are very competitive. They have a very specific language.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things. Like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code SHAVE at checkout. That's harrys.com, code SHAVE. Enjoy.
And you kind of need that external support on top of the good idea.
That's a industry in and of itself. Isn't it grant writing,
it
pretty
is.
Much?
It absolutely is, yes.
Tell me if somebody wants to find out more about what it is that Beckon's doing or about your studies and the future of cancer detection, how do they do that, Chris?
I think the easiest way is to just check out our website. It's beken.bio, beken.bio, and there's our contact information on there. We'd love to hear from anybody that's interested in working with us or learning more about what we're doing.
Thank you. I appreciate your time and your efforts. I really do, and good luck. I hope it all works out.
Thank you so much, Tommy. Take care.
You bet. Christopher Milan, founder and CEO of Beken Bio. A lot going on, and we talked about, you know, development when it comes to the medical corridor. This goes back to after Katrina and so forth. So let's hope this all works out and it leads to bigger and better things. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk to J.P. Morrell, New Orleans City Council member, not just about the mayor's travel ban, but WWL-TV's story saying that New Orleans is $800 million short to complete roadwork projects. What? We'll talk about it when we come back. Right now, time for WWL First News. 8:45, quarter till 9, Tommy Tucker, WWL. If it wasn't this, it'd be something else with city government. J.P. Morrell joins us, New Orleans City Council member, who is a council member at large and sits on a budget committee. How you doing, J.P.?
Tommy, how are you?
I'm okay. Tell me about this street thing and $800 million. What the heck's going on?
So what has happened is, because of tremendous mismanagement by the Cantrell administration in the first term of all of the money that we had allocated for streets and infrastructure, we are running out of money sooner rather than later. And at the council meeting yesterday, when the administration proposed how it wanted to spend the remaining money on limited projects, they hadn't consulted with any of the district council members over which streets needed to be done. It seemed like they kind of just picked which streets they wanted to do out of the hat, and it led to a lot of conflict because, obviously, those district council members, they're the ones fielding the complaints from the communities. They know which streets, if there's not enough money to get it done, they know which streets should be the priorities, and as usual, the administration kind of did its own thing, and it led to chaos.
All right, so let me get back to where the money came from. It was post-Katrina. They talked about the water collapsing the streets, collapsing the pipes, which led to the settlement, correct? Am I right? Or I remember
correct. It's commonly referred to as the JIRR money, but it's the settlement money from that. And as you know, that was done when Mary Landrieu was senator. It began under Mitch Landrieu's administration. He was kind of doing streets systematically. There was some concern he was going too slow. Mayor Cantrell comes in. They open up all the streets. They wholly mismanaged that program, and all those streets that were opened haphazardly, Tommy, they all ran way over budget. So the administration before I was on the council, they overspent on basically kind of crappy work, and they spent the money down so quickly that when a Mr. Threat came in who replaced Mr. Ramsey in the second term, tried to get a handle on how badly they had misspent the money, but the cat was already out of the bag and they'd already overspent on kind of subpar work. And now we're dealing with trying to finish some token amount with the remaining money. And it's going to leave a lot of people very unhappy. A lot of people who were promised new streets for years, they're never going to get their street done.
All right, now hang on, Freddie. Let me ask you. We started with $2 billion, right?
Right.
So this is not money that they spent all of that $2 billion, but spent it in a haphazard manner, or is a time frame running out where they're going to lose the money if they don't spend it because they didn't spend it quickly enough? That's what I'm confused about.
It's the former. When Mayor Landrieu was doing the streets, there was a concern that his deliberative way of doing it, we weren't spending it fast enough. Mm-hmm. And so during first term Mayor Cantrell, they chose to spend it faster. And by faster, that meant, as you may recall, in that first 4 years, it seemed like every other street was open and not work wasn't being done on it. Mm-hmm. So as those streets were mismanaged, as those projects ran beyond deadline, as you know, when construction work takes longer, it gets more expensive, right? So all those streets cost more money than they should have. And as those first streets that the administration opened up went higher and higher in cost, we had less money on the back end. And so with the remainder of the money we have our hands on currently, there is not enough to get to the backlog of streets that were promised at the beginning of the project to get done. And to add insult to injury, as the administration was trying to triage what money they had left, they did not consult with the district council members, who are the ones that are fielding all of the street complaints and who know those neighborhoods they represent best and should have had input on. This should be a priority street, not this street, because this street has more traffic for the like. You know what I mean? Like, basically, and what it means is we don't necessarily agree with the administration on which streets will finally get this last chunk of money. And kind of to also add insult to injury, they said, but hey, we're gonna put a little bit of money in this bond issuance we want to put before voters in the fall. If you vote for it, you can get a little more money for streets, but you're not really going to have input in that either. And the meeting kind of went sideways.
8:50, 10 till 9. Let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back. Talking to J.P. Morrell about the city now saying that they're $800 million short to fix the streets. And I think maybe we'll address it when we come back with what would have been the proper way to do it to avoid where we are. And also, what is it going to mean now that we are where we are, and what's it going to actually look like around the city? If you have any questions or comments, 504-260-1870, Traffic Now, WWL. 8:55, 5 till 9, J.P. Morrell, our guest, New Orleans City Councilmember, talking about $800 million short when it comes to fixing the streets out of $2 billion that maybe was squandered. J.P., I got to ask, just to be fair and accurate, did prioritization of certain streets for the Super Bowl have anything to do with this at all?
I don't think so. I mean, when you look at the amount of money that was used, I mean, if you're talking about as far as, like, was work suspended in other parts of the city, I mean, that's possible. When you're talking about money spent, not really. I mean, when you look at the numbers we got from the Super Bowl, I mean, I think I want to say it was $10 million was spent on the Super Bowl as far as doing road work. And some of that road work had some overlap with it. So, no, I mean, what we're seeing right now is not a challenge with timing. We're seeing that the amount of money available has shrunk substantially. So, I mean, it was admitted by the administration, or at least not disputed by the administration yesterday, that there was, when the council repeatedly brought up mismanagement of the first tranche of money, but prior to Mr. Threat taking control, no one said we were wrong, and we prompted them several times saying, does anyone disagree with us? And everyone kind of sheepishly shook their head. I mean, if you look at just...
Go ahead.
If you just look at where we were at the end of the Landrieu administration and where we were at the beginning of this term, the second term of the Cantrell administration, a tremendous amount of money was spent with not a lot of work product.
Real quick, somebody texted in, said, my street near the break of Levy is on complete redo list. Does this mean I will not get a new street in Lakeview?
It's possible. I mean, the what I will tell you is, and it was on the council presentation yesterday, and I'll see if I can get it posted on socials, but just because you were on the list, they produced to us a new list, and that new list is significantly shorter. And there are tremendous people that were on the list for new streets that will never get a street from this pot of money. Now, there is an argument that was made, well, listen, we're going to put $25 million per district in the bond issuance, but even the Public Works admitted $25 million when it comes to street work and a backlog is really not that much.
All right, so, let me ask you this.
Yeah, go ahead.
When it comes to the $2 billion that FEMA gave the city for the hurricane damage, is it accurate to say that some of the streets that prompted that grant are not going to be fixed and others would have gotten fixed or partially fixed, and the ones that were the reason for the grant will not be even looked at?
Honestly, Tommy, I can't answer that question because I can't draw that line one-to-one. I mean, is it possible? It's possible. I mean, the argument that was made to us yesterday is all the streets that had all their documents in and were prepared to go were prioritized, but we didn't get any evidence that they were prioritized by the state of the street. You see what I'm saying? Like, they were like, these projects had all their ducks in a row, so they went, and we prioritized the last bit of money, the projects that were in the best position, but they didn't present any correlation that determination was the actual status, like bad the street was.
Let me let you wrap this up with 20 seconds. To me, this screams, we won't know the damage of this administration for years to come, but it's going to be a lot of damage in terms of holding the city back. Is that inaccurate?
Yes, and I think what we need is next administration needs to be completely transparent and finally have a more robust way of following road work in real time, because had we been doing that, we all would have caught this sooner.
Thank you, JP. Appreciate it. I think the legacy of Latoya Cantrell is going to be, man, the city's going to have lost 8 years and then still be paying this back years from now.